This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday the 21st of June 2024. Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Hampshire Chronicle from the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. May I introduce our readers for this week? Heather Bryant.
Hello.
Richard Martin.
Hello.
Deborah Cranmer.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Peter Lydiard. And so we begin with our usual regular notices. The first is to say, if you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with a recording you have received from us, please contact us on 01962 861229. That is 01962 861229. And this number can also be found on the key fob attached to your memory stick. As you listen to the recordings, please remember you can use the buttons on your box to move on from an item before it finishes, or back to any of the tracks if you want to listen again. And of course, for those of you with computers or tablets, apart from using the memory stick in the box provided, you can load it onto your own device. And you can also access the weekly recordings of the Chronicle through our website, www.winchestertalkingnews.com. Just go to the website, click on News on the header bar, locate the recording you want to hear, and click Download. The recordings are listed in date order, the most recent first on the list. You can also hear Winchester Talking Newspaper on OWAS Community Radio every Saturday at 5 p.m. That's on the DAB channel. You just retune your DAB radio and search for OWAS. And you can also listen to us reading the news as a podcast via the Hampshire Chronicle website. So, on with our usual headline stories. There is no doubt in the minds of this week's editors as to the headlines this week. Three of the four headlines are on the same subject, although separate articles. Concerning the uproar over the cathedral's director of music, who is shortly to leave his post. So, Heather, could we have the first headline, please?
Bishop to investigate music row. Dean promises swift action to fill vacancies. An independent review has been commissioned by the Bishop of Winchester after a series of allegations about the conduct of the cathedral's music department. Winchester Cathedral's choral music has been thrown into the spotlight after concerns were raised about the upcoming departure of Director of Music Andrew Lumsden, who leaves in July after 22 years. Former choristers claim the cathedral's reputation is at risk, and several have expressed their views publicly, with one, Toshi Ogita, who deputises for the lay clerks of Winchester Cathedral Choir, writing directly to the Bishop of Winchester, the Right Reverend Philip Mount Stephen, to urge him to launch an investigation. This week, the senior non-executive member of Winchester Cathedral Chapter, Mark Byford, resigned, prompting Bishop Mount Stephen to commission an independent review. Dean Ogle said the cathedral was committed to investing £850,000 into music this year, and that it would act swiftly to fill vacancies.
Thank you, Heather. Richard, please.
And on a similar theme, Bishop to review launch after latest departure. The Bishop of Winchester has launched a review after the resignation of a senior member of the Winchester Cathedral Chapter. This comes as concerns are being raised over the future of music at the cathedral. Mark Byford, who was the senior non-executive member of Winchester Cathedral Chapter and also the former head of the BBC World Service and its former Deputy Director General, resigned this week. He said, "As a matter of both deep reluctance and deep disappointment, I have decided I should stand down. I've given a great deal of thought and indeed prayer in relation to this move, and fortunately, with great sadness, I have come to the conclusion that it's in the best interest of the cathedral, myself, and associated relationships within the chapter that I take this course of action. I will not be making any further comment, and I would be grateful if this can be respected at such a challenging period for the cathedral and myself. A spokesperson for the Bishop of Winchester, Philip Mount Stephen, had previously told the Chronicle that while he is working hard to listen and respond to the issues that would have been raised, he would not be taking direct action. However, the Bishop of Winchester's office confirmed late on Tuesday that an independent review has been commissioned in the wake of Mr. Byford's resignation. A spokesperson said, in the light of that significant development in the cathedral's governance, the bishop has decided to commission an independent review under the terms of the cathedral's measure 2021 into the events that have led to this. Concerns have been raised following the announcement that the director of music at Winchester Cathedral, Dr. Andrew Lumsden, would be stepping down at the end of July. Former choristers also expressed fears over the departure of organist Claudia Grinnell in 2021, the organist, I beg your pardon, Claudia Grinnell, and in 2021, George Castle. One lay clerk, Toshi Ogita, broke ranks to write a public letter to the bishop asking him to intervene. It said, if the cathedral is not to lose its credibility for decades, an external reviewer must be urgently appointed to conduct a review into the worship department. Winchester's reputation among musicians has been utterly compromised. The Dean of Winchester Cathedral, the Very Reverend Catherine Ogle, said it's working to address concerns over the future of music at the cathedral and is committed to investing £850,000 into improving it. She said, we want people to know we're listening to the concerns expressed around the management of cathedral music, including concerns about the culture. We're actively working on addressing these and will communicate more in the near future.
Thank you, Richard. Deborah.
And a third article on the same subject. Delight at new interim music director. Winchester Cathedral has announced a new interim director of music to replace Andrew Lumsden. The departure of Dr. Lumsden next month has caused widespread concern for the future of choral music in the cathedral. The new interim director will be Andrew Lucas, currently Master of Music at St. Albans Cathedral. Mr. Lucas has held the post since 1998, and the cathedral choir has maintained a strong reputation through recordings and regular radio and television broadcasts. The Dean of Winchester, the Very Reverend Catherine Ogle, said, I'm delighted by the appointment of Andrew Lucas as interim director of music. He is ideally suited to this role and will enable us to continue nurturing the outstanding choral tradition at Winchester Cathedral. Andrew brings exemplary skills and experience as director of music, a commitment to producing music to the very highest standard, and a deep commitment of care for the musicians. We look forward to his steady and experienced hand guiding us in this time of change. Mr. Lucas said, having worked for almost 27 years at St. Albans Cathedral, where musical excellence has always been part of its daily life, I am honoured to be invited to maintain the long tradition of outstanding choral music in the daily worship of Winchester Cathedral. I look forward to providing support and continuity as the choirs, music staff, chapter, and the whole cathedral community move into a new era with their next director of music. His role will be to lead the choral foundation and also have input into the relationship of the cathedral has with pilgrims and Winchester College. A search for a permanent successor to Dr. Lumsden is underway.
Thank you, Deborah. Then the last headline story is not about the cathedral music. It's headed, £90,000 breathes life into neglected ponds. 8 derelict dew ponds in Hampshire and Sussex have been restored thanks to an investment of more than £90,000 from the South Downs National Park Trust. Stagnation and falling water levels linked to climate change has had a damaging impact on the habitats. Now, experts say they were flourishing with wildlife such as toads, dragonflies and various plant species. Plans are underway to breathe life back into 2 more ponds near Emsworth, aimed at supporting white turtle dove populations. The restoration effort is credited to the Pounds for Ponds initiative, which was launched a year ago, aims to revive about 100 dew ponds across the South Downs National Park. In its inaugural year, Pounds for Ponds amassed £200,000, indicating future restoration projects are plausible. Contributions came from the National Lottery Heritage Fund, the Bannister Trust, BMW, Swire Charitable Trust, and individual donors. Butterfly Conservation was granted £13,000 so that it could oversee the refurbishment of a dew pond at Magdalen Hill Down near Winchester. The ambition is to raise an estimated £1 million to restore 100 dew ponds. Jan Nolson, Diversity Officer for the National Park, said, "Seeing these restored dew ponds springing back to life is absolutely amazing and just shows how nature can flourish if given the chance." There actually used to be around 1,000 dew ponds across the South Downs landscape, but this number has fallen dramatically over the century. Restoring these bodies of water is a really good way of tackling biodiversity loss because these ponds support almost three quarters of all freshwater species found in the lowland landscapes like South Downs. I'd like to thank everyone who has donated to make these restorations possible, and we're excited to be able to restore even more in the future. Pounds for Ponds is just one strand of the National Park's ongoing Renature initiative. A concerted effort over the past 3 years has seen a huge amount of new habitat being created, including woodlands, hedgerows, wetlands, and wildflower meadows. Well, as usual, we then go on to the death notices. Starting with Heather, please.
Goody. Guy Goody. Peacefully, 9th of May, aged 93.
Gordon. Mary Isabel Gordon. Nay, Esther. Peacefully at Techfield House on the 19th of May, aged 88.
Green. Christopher David Green. Peacefully at Winchester Hospice on the 22nd of May, aged 73.
Hodges, John Hodges, a brother of St Cross for many years, peacefully, 9th of June, aged 96.
Hunt, Geoffrey Edmund Tozer Hunt, of Manor Farm, Knights Enham.
Hutchings, Carol Hutchings, peacefully on the 10th of June.
Marsden, Janet Elizabeth Marsden, peacefully at Winchester Hospice on the 4th of June.
Martin Edwin William John Martin, known as Eddie, peacefully 7th of June, aged 85.
Merritt, Graham Merritt, peacefully at Winchester Hospice, 4th of June, aged 77.
Osmond, Richard George Osmond, peacefully on the 8th of June.
Phillips, Peter Phillips of Banbridge, peacefully on the 30th of May, aged 94.
Sparks, Jonathan Hands Sparks, 5th of June, aged 52.
Wilson, Nicky Wilson, 28th of May, aged 83.
Thank you. Now we go on to a Christian comment read by Heather, please.
This Christian comment is from the senior pastor of Winchester Vineyard Church, headed Life-Changing Biography. I've been reading an inspiring book recently, only 24 chapters long. It's a historical biography, packed with action, mystery, supernatural activity, and it really encourages me in my faith. It's the Gospel of St. Luke from the New Testament of the Bible. The author, Luke, although not one of the original disciples, was very much part of the early church. Referred to by Paul as the beloved physician and my fellow worker, he was clearly a well-educated man and observant writer. He spoke to many who had been with Jesus to get the details correct, as he writes in his introduction to Theophilus, an influential Gentile believer, With this in mind, since I myself have carefully investigated everything from the beginning, I too decided to write an orderly account for you, most excellent Theophilus, so that you may know the certainty of the things you have been taught. Luke 1, verses 3-4. At Winchester Vineyard Church, we're reading through Luke to better understand Jesus' ministry and message, and we have noticed that three key themes occur right through the book. The first is that outsiders are welcomed into God's kingdom, from the shepherds as the first nativity guests, to the healing of the centurion's servant Zacchaeus, the tax collector, and the parables of the Good Samaritan and prodigal son. Jesus deliberately pays attention to those who are lost, weak, sick, marginalized by society, and those who have messed up or made themselves unclean. He also challenges the Jewish elite who believe they are already insiders by virtue of keeping the law. With incredible love and a complete lack of judgment, Jesus always lands on the side of those who find themselves on the outside of things. The second key theme is that Jesus has come to bring spiritual freedom from Satan's captivity. He describes a direct power showdown in the wilderness, healing the sick and driving out evil spirits, a demonized man and the herd of pigs, and Jesus' inevitable path to the cross. With echoes of the Exodus from Egypt, Jesus has come to bring people who are trapped and oppressed out of spiritual captivity and into freedom and life. Lastly, Luke presents key teaching on following God, showing how to live out Jesus' upside-down kingdom values. There's particular wisdom around prayer, trust, wealth, and possessions. He also describes Jesus' sadness for those who choose not to embrace God's kingdom through Jesus, both personally and as a nation. Throughout the entire narrative, as Jesus' disciples slowly learn to minister and teach, his increasing confrontations ultimately lead to the dramatic events of Easter. Post-resurrection, Jesus promises that the Holy Spirit will empower the church to continue his work. And that's the story Luke picks up in his second book, The Acts of the Apostles. You can catch up on the Vineyard perspective on Luke's Gospel via our YouTube channel. But if you haven't actually read it recently, I can thoroughly recommend this short but radical book to encourage and challenge and maybe even shake up your faith. Nigel Hemming, Senior Pastor of Winchester Vineyard Church.
Thank you, Heather. Now, we go on to letters to the editor. There are 12 letters, in the Hampshire Chronicle this week on a variety of subjects. So, Richard, could you give us the first letter, please?
Yes, Monica Gill argues that Winchester is not thriving. I cannot for the life of me understand where Dr. Spencer and Councillor Thompson are coming from when they say Winchester is thriving, Hampshire Chronicle, June 13th. Shock for shoppers as stores close. For those of us living on pensions and minimum wage, Winchester only caters for the more affluent, who can afford to eat out, join gyms, buy bikes, etc. And what we need is more affordable shops. Not all of us have cars so that we can shop at two of the larger supermarkets, which are out of town, and with an ageing population, a better choice of shops are needed. I recently was in conversation with two couples who were visiting. One couple from Wales who said they were surprised at the lack of affordable shops and lack of choice. They also remarked on the cleanliness and safety walking around, trying to avoid inconsiderate cyclists and uneven pavements. The second couple were making a return visit after 10 years from America, and they couldn't believe the decline in cleanliness and choice of shops. They'd planned to stay for 4 nights, but said one was enough. Although the council and business improvement district have no control over greedy landlords and who they lease to, shoppers will have no choice but to shop online, which is to say the least, can be annoying when items have to be returned. So we're becoming a lazy society when we have to make no effort but sit at home pressing a few buttons. Monica Gill, Godson House, Winchester.
Thank you, Richard. Deborah, please.
And the next letter is from Trevor Piper. Questions over church money. It's no wonder that people are leaving the Church of England in droves. We understand that the new Bishop of Winchester has moved into a new £2.7 million house in Winchester, and that the old house is to be refurbished for further use. This is an outrageous use of Church of England funds. We in Coldham Common struggle to keep our building in a good state of repair, and our heating system doesn't work and now needs replacement. In addition, our vicarage is being sold from under us. No wonder the yearly quota is so high. What justification can the diocese have for spending so much money on a house? They need to come out to the parishes and see the falling numbers in the pews and the fact that our vicar has to serve four churches. But instead, they will sit in their ivory towers and carry on regardless without being held to account. Trevor Piper, Skintle Green, Coldham Common.
The next letter is written by Hayley Garner. It's headed, Speak Up for Our Children. The general election is in less than a month, so there's a chance we'll soon be seeing prospective Hampshire political candidates and their supporters on our high streets or knocking on our doors. Well, this gives us a chance to speak to individuals from all political parties about what they will do to support babies, children and young people in our communities. We want to encourage political candidates to be a voice for children if they are elected as our local MP. Working at the NSPCC, I know the impact abuse and neglect can have on a child, but I also know how quality support can help to keep children safe and help those who have experienced abuse to recover. Children need to be protected at home, in school, online, and in our local community. That's why I'm asking everyone to urge political parties to prioritise preventing abuse and neglect so that every child can grow up safe and healthy. Please join with the NSPCC to ensure our new Hampshire Members of Parliament speak up for children. To find out more about the NSPCC's calls for a new UK government, go to nspcc.org.uk. And that was written by Hayley Garner, who is the NSPCC Local Campaigns Manager for London and the South East. Heather, please.
This from Paul Hickey is headed Poor England Performance. Euro 2024, England versus Serbia. Another tedious, limp, lazy performance from England. We've had 58 years of tedious, limp, lazy performances from England since 1966. And this is another one to add to the long list. What's wrong with England players and England management? England only had a couple of shots on goal the whole match. They hardly ever got the ball into the penalty area. They were doing so many back passes back to the goalkeeper. If I see another John Stones back pass to the goalkeeper, I'll scream. Foden was non-existent, and Harry Kane was not given any service from the midfield. No wonder Kane kept coming back and dropping deep. England was so slow, lazy, limp and negative. This is the tedious play that we've experienced from England players for 58 years. Why haven't England won a tournament since 1966? It's because England players since 1966 are so lazy, slow and limp for all England managers, and all England managers since Sir Alf Ramsey allow the players to constantly be lazy, slow and limp. It seems to be in the DNA of the players. Some of them play really well for their club teams, but as soon as they put on an England shirt, they become so limp. All managers since Sir Alf Ramsey seem to follow this same philosophy. They don't punish players who give poor performances. They pick these same players for the next match and the next match and so on. Gareth Southgate has to go. Bring someone dynamic and a born winner like Man City's Guardiola into the team. England was so bad against Serbia. Another tedious performance to add to the 58 years of tedious performances. Make Guardiola the next manager. He'll shake up England and the England players. He won't put up with lazy performances. This from Paul Hickey, Badger Farm, Winchester.
Thank you, Heather. There is rapt attention around the table because some of us have not got a clue what he's talking about. Anyway, on to the next letter, please, Richard.
I thought we won.
No. No. Only true. Twice.
I wasn't paying rapt attention. Right, so this from Victor Pastor, who urges us not to stand for animal suffering. With every purchase we may unknowingly endorse animal suffering. Testing on animals for cosmetics and ingredients linked to household items continues, despite the growing availability of modern alternatives, and could be linked to many more items in our homes than we would like to know, including clothes, furniture, electronic goods and paint. This election gives us the power to push for change. By encouraging candidates to prioritise animal protection, we can align our shopping habits with our values and lead the way to a cruelty-free future. It's an issue that affects us all, and it's time our policies reflected that. Victoria Pastor, Hells Road, Southampton.
Thank you, Richard. Deborah?
And the next letter is from Tony Gaster, fears about lack of action. Should we be worried about the changes in our city and the apparent lack of action? Remember the old police station on North Walls, demolished and now used for what? Then we had a multi-storey car park, much needed in the city for those making short visits, partly demolished. Then, finally, Friarsgate Medical Centre demolished. Great, an opportunity to build a much-needed homes in our city. Yet what has happened? We had Currys, now a 20-mile round trip away. Then Halfords, much needed and going soon. Now I read Bell Fine Arts is closing. Thank goodness we still have our wonderful cathedral, which needs all our support. But I suppose the council has no influence there, or maybe that would close too. During this election, we hear constantly how wonderful things are, but my examples might suggest otherwise. Tony Gaster, Old Kennels Lane, Oliver's Battery, and there is a letter editor's note. The site of Friarsgate Medical Centre is soon to be a pop-up park. A meanwhile use before the area is redeveloped as part of the Silver Hill Central Winchester regeneration, currently in the pipeline. Watch this space.
I think we might be watching for quite some time in unusual progress of the Silver Hill development. Right, my next letter is actually very short, but it is accompanied by four cartoons of faces, so I'll try and describe them. Anyway, the letter says, A Fun Look at Winchester Candidates, and is written by Michael Ellis. Here is my view of the parliamentary candidates for Winchester. While the cartoon seeks to poke fun at the candidates, I congratulate and thank them all for standing and giving us a broad democratic choice. The top left hand corner, there's Lorraine Estelle, a longish face with long hair, from the Green Party, and underneath it says, For Earth, There Is Hope. Then there's Danny Chambers for the Lib Dems, underneath that it says, Trust me, I'm a vet. Then there's another long face. This is for Sean Whelan from the Reform Party. Send them back without regret. The next one is Flick Drummond for the Conservatives. Yes, another unflattering view of her. Underneath it says, Don't flush the loo when it's wet. Then there is Hannah Dawson for the Labour Party. The Workers' Bet. Andrew Davis for the SDP, I'm ready and set. And then there are three independents who are Andy Limming, Chris Barfoot, Kevin De Cruz. And underneath it says, What you see is what you get. So that was written by Michael Ellis of Downside Road, Winchester. Heather, please.
This from Helen Calder, Campaigner's Waste of Paper. Since the start of the general election campaign, I have so far received the equivalent of 12 sheets of A4 paper in campaigning material from Danny Chambers, the Liberal Democrat candidate for Winchester. For a constituency which I understand to have an electorate of approximately 77,300, that's around 927,600 sheets of A4 paper already, and the campaign has another 2 weeks to go. How can this be appropriate for a party that claims strong environmental policies? Helen Calder, Winchester.
Thank you. Richard, please.
Nick Keith points up the city's need for affordable homes. Just Calder's letter of June the 6th, Look Beyond Design and Character, provides a balanced view of housing requirements in the city, whether developments are to benefit and profit mainly the wealthy few rather than the many in our community. She highlights the development of a new music school by Peter Simmons in Berwick Road. The college has planning permission to replace a Victorian house with new facility with excellent credentials in biodiversity and heat recovery, etc., which will be open to children in the whole of Hampshire. She also reminds us that Alfred Holmes are proposing to demolish another important Victorian house with a large garden in Berwick Road and replace that with a set of executive homes. As I drive through Winchester, the city seems awash with executive homes. From Lockburn Place in St Cross, near where I live, up Sleepers Hill, along Shulbolton Avenue, and beyond Waitrose on Stockbridge Road. Surely we need developers and planners to provide more elegant and affordable flats for first-time buyers. It's to be hoped that Alfred Holmes and other developers think as much about what is profitable for the whole community and for the green environment, as well as their rich buyers and their company profits. Nick Keith, Kingsgate News, Winchester.
Thank you, Richard. Deborah.
The next letter is from Wendy McClellan. Vans blocking bus stops. With reference to your article, Cook Van Blocks Bus Stop in Winchester, Annoying Residents, on June 7th, this happens everywhere. Apparently it is illegal to block a bus pull-in, but nobody takes any notice. All buses now have wheelchair access, which makes it vital for them to be able to pull up in a straight line so that they can drop a ramp to facilitate safe access and departure for any wheelchair users. It also makes it safer for all bus users, many of whom have mobility issues or have shopping trolleys, etc. As a daily user of local buses, I would like to see the rules tightened and implemented for the benefits of all drivers and passengers. Wendy McLennan, Chichester.
Thank you. The next letter from me is written by George Med, and it's headed Reform Schools to Fight Crime. How will this new party handle the increasing youth crime, I wonder? Reform schools, perhaps? It's a very long letter. It's written by George Med of Finch's Lane, Twyford. Heather, please.
This letter from Sarah Jones, headed Dr. Lumsden in Concert. Many Hampshire Chronicle readers will be aware of the sad news of Andy Lumsden's departure from the cathedral as Director of Music, and that there has been a certain amount of controversy which has been aired in letters and articles published in recent weeks. The Wainfleet Singers are delighted that he will continue as our own Director of Music, and that we will benefit from his outstanding musicianship at least until a permanent successor at the cathedral is found. We will conduct our next three concerts, including both December 2024 and Spring 2025, in Winchester Cathedral. For a more immediate opportunity to see and support Andy Lumsden in concert with the Wainfleet Singers, performing a slightly different repertoire, we invite your readers to come to the concert on July the 6th in New Hall, A Summer Romance. The programme includes Bernstein's West Side Story Suite, with all those iconic tunes such as Maria, tonight and somewhere. In addition, the choir will sing Brahms' Liebeslieder waltzes and Constant Lambert's extraordinary work, the Rio Grande. With four hands at the piano, provided by Radio 3's David Owen Norris and George Castle, as well as Sebastian Gard on percussion, there will be musical fireworks. Tickets are £30 to include a post-concert glass of fizz in the Warden's Garden and are available via our website at waynefleetsingers.org.uk/concerts. Tickets will also be on sale on the door on the evening. Sarah Jones, Wayne Fleet Singers.
Thank you. Now, if you have an opinion or a subject you'd like to air in the Hampshire Chronicle, you can contact them on 01962 860836. That is 01962 860836. Or you can email them news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or you can also write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. Now we go on to editorial comment read by Deborah, please.
Shutting up shop due to a shift in habits. As the Hampshire Chronicle was going to press, staff at shoe shop Chiropody on the High Street were busy packing up the business. Seven staff members were told the day before that their shop was closing. The closest branch is now in Southampton. A handwritten sign, scrawled in biro, had been forlornly hung in the window. Boxes were being packed. The writing had been on the wall for the small chain for some time, with the Salisbury store closing in June 2023, then reopening a few months later in November, raising hopes, and then closing again in May. The Harrogate store also closed a few weeks ago. This shoe shop might not have been to everyone's taste, catering for the older end of the market, who require comfortable footwear rather than the pinchy, fashionable type, but its presence added to the vibrancy of the city centre. It gave choice and the ability to see and feel before you buy, a commodity highly valued for those in need of comfortable footwear. Eco, another shoe shop further up the High Street, is also mid-closing down sale, with an expected final date next month. Fashion shops like Phase 8 and Pavilion have also been feeling the squeeze of a shift in consumer habits, with Phase 8 closing last month and Pavilion's owner deciding that now is the right time to retire. Don't get us wrong, there are signs of life returning in Winchester, and we're sure that it won't be long before other businesses take their highly desirable spots. But the question of what type of businesses they will be is one that could shape the desirability and attraction of the city for years to come. Do we really want a city packed full of nail bars and trendy coffee shops?
Thank you, Deborah. Well, now we come to the opinion piece written this week by Khalid Aziz. It's headed Milestones We Can Count On. In the troubled and turbulent times, not helped by a seemingly endless run-up to the general election on July the 4th, it is hardly surprising that 4 in 10 people are turning away from news bulletins. Head in the sand, it might seem, but perhaps in rejecting an interminable diet of war, famine, economic woe, and any number of other apocalyptic horsemen you can mind, wish to imagine, perhaps it is a reflection of humankind's fundamental optimism. We want to be aware of what is going on around us, but we also want solutions and positivity. We want to celebrate our ability to cope, keep calm, and carry on. I was privileged to be in the audience at Portsmouth for the D-Day 80 commemorations. Although all of us, apart from the 20 or so veterans that were front and centre of the activities, were all post-war babies, even the youngest generation were in no doubt about what it was all about. Moving stories of courage and suffering, an evocation of Vera Lynn and Gracie Fields, of White Cliffs and Sing As We Go, it was fundamentally a positive act of remembrance of how our sceptred ours came through it all, bloodied but unbowed. When the King and Queen appeared on stage, we stood and applauded, acknowledging the Sovereign's own courage, appearing just a day after another round of cancer treatment in hospital, leading this historic occasion when anyone else in his position would have been at home with their feet up. We remained standing throughout His Majesty's moving and obviously heartfelt address, evoking memories of his grandfather's steadfastness 8 decades earlier. In such times, such occasions breathe new life into our bruised and battered souls. We walked away across South Sea Common, no less certain about the horror and ultimate futility of war, but somehow uplifted. We need these events. And so it was, 10 days later, when the Irish Guards had the honour of trooping their colour on the King's official birthday. We see it every year, but this year, a last-minute appearance by the Princess of Wales added a much welcome layer of royal icing. The royal who never puts her foot wrong won the nation's hearts years ago. Today, we are all anxious about her cancer diagnosis. As anyone who has undergone such treatment knows, you get good days and bad days. Catherine was having a good day and rose magnificently to the occasion, looking bandbox resplendent as she watched with her children from a window and later emerging to cheering crowds, relieved to see her on the balcony of Buckingham Palace for this day at least. Once again, the Guards regiments had done their precision drill to the envy of foreign dignitaries, braving a rainy Horse Guards parade. It never seems to vary, save for the regiment is parading its colour. Over the years, they've been skittish horses, and on particularly hot June day, a guardsman fainted, but with an admirable demonstration of army discipline, lying to attention before being brought around. We need these events. They are milestones in our calendar. When much around us seems to be crumbling, these markers seem immutable, undisturbed by the prospect of an increasingly fractious election campaign. Just imagine how it is in France at the moment. Emmanuel Macron is both political leader and head of state. The French have no separation of these institutions. When one goes, it all goes. Asked why I am such a keen monarchist, I usually reply, because it denies an overweeningly ambitious political chancer from having the ultimate top job. More recently, I've come to think it's also because of the unerring example of service rendered by our late Queen and now the King that demonstrates a positive force in our land. Something for us to cleave to, remembering that things could be much worse without them. Right, we now go on to Belgarum, which, as you probably remember, is an alternative look at the news. Two items this week. First one from Heather, please.
Headed, Fire Cadets Tackle Challenges. Fire cadets from across Hampshire and the Isle of Wight took part in a day of firefighting-related activities and challenges on June the 8th. For the first time, these units combined for an action-packed day at Oasis Academy, Mayfield, in Southampton, including cadets from Basingstoke, Eastleigh, Gosport, Ringwood, Rushmore, Sandown and Southsea. Teams vied for points across a series of drill challenges featuring firefighting equipment. All relished a barbecue dinner and celebratory ice creams. The Eastleigh Fire Cadets emerged victorious. The Fire Cadets unit make up part of a training program run by the Fire Service.
Richard, please.
Magical Bridgerton Bliss. A Bridgerton-inspired event held at a listed property near Stockbridge have been a success, say organisers. The event was held at Houghton Lodge on Sunday, June the 9th, and saw the Grade II listed cottage, which dates to 1793, transformed into a scene from the Regency-era series. Visitors were able to don their finest period attire. The Hampshire Regency dancers were on hand to entertain the audience, inviting guests to join in and learn the steps themselves. The Bossard String Quartet played an array of modern pop hits, in a Regency-era style. The glass house, the estate's new tea room, served up an array of treats, with guests able to enjoy afternoon tea, pre-booked picnic hampers featuring local Hampshire produce, Regency-themed cakes, and Bridgerton-inspired cocktails and mocktails. Guests were also able to follow a curated trail through the gardens, visiting the Walled Garden, Oriental Garden, Peacock Garden, and the Grotto. A workshop led by Victoria, the lodge florist, allowed visitors to craft their own Regency-inspired floral corsage. Sophie Busk, owner of Houghton Lodge, said, "The joy and enthusiasm of our visitors made Bridgerton Bliss a truly magical day. We're thrilled to have shared the beauty and history of Houghton Lodge."
Thank you, Richard. Now, a couple of historical items. The first one's from Deborah, please.
Magical price for Harry Potter book. A rare first edition Harry Potter book that is up for auction is expected to sell for up to £60,000. Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone, the first book in the series, will be auctioned next week in Edinburgh, the city where J.K. Rowling wrote much of the blockbuster. One of only 500 first edition hardbacks printed in 1997, it's valued at between £40,000 and £60,000. A small number of copies were initially produced owing to the publisher's uncertainty about whether or not the book would prove popular. The novel has gone on to sell more than 120 million copies, making it one of the best-selling books in history. The rare book, manuscripts, maps and photography auction at Lion and Turnbull on June the 19th includes two other books in the series, a copy of Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets, signed by J.K. Rowling, valued between £4,000 and £6,000, and an edition of Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban, valued between £3,000 and £4,000. Cathy Marsden, head of books and manuscripts at the auctioneers, said, "A first edition of Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone is an exceptionally rare book to find in any condition, and one in such an excellent condition could well be called the jewel in any Harry Potter collector's crown." She added, "Given that much of the writing took place in Edinburgh, it's fitting that this early and important piece of Harry Potter history will be sold in the capital." Other notable books being auctioned include a signed first edition of Ian Fleming's Casino Royale and a complete set of A.A. Milne's Willie the Pooh books, signed in each volume by both Milne and the illustrator E.H. Shepherd. Casino Royale, the first novel in the James Bond spy series, is valued between £30,000 and £50,000. Of the four Winnie the Pooh books, When We Were Very Young, valued between £7,000 and £10,000, was written by A.A. Milne during a wet holiday in Wales in 1923. The entire set is valued at between £15,000 and £22,000. Acquired new by the vendor's family, it has never previously been offered for sale.
The second historical item is headed Captain Swing's Message Honours Neglected Rioters. An evening of readings to remember the Swing Riots of 1830 will be held at Michelover Church on June the 22nd. Two academics from the University of Winchester, Professor Bill Lucas, Chair of the English Project and Director of the Centre for Real World Learning, and Professor Christopher Mulvey, Emeritus Professor of English, will be spearheading the event. The Swing Rioters were primarily southern workers who opposed the rise of farm mechanisation and protesting about their poor pay and conditions. The riots were one of the largest outbreaks of social unrest in the 19th century England, often overlooked in comparison to the more remembered movements and groups such as the Luddites and the Tolpuddle Martyrs. The English Project, under the leadership of Professor Lucas, aims to refocus attention on the Swing Riots in preparation for its bicentenary in 2030. Joining the duo at the readings will be Nigel Bradshaw, Samuel Collings, and community historian Edward Fennell. Mr. Bradshaw, also serving as director for the night, is a professional actor, as is Mr. Collings. The selection of Mr. Lover Church as the event venue is particularly fitting. Local man Henry Cook, then 19, was hanged for his involvement in the riots. His memorial stone is in the church. Cook was one of 300 individuals tried at a grand assize in Winchester Great Hall, nearly all of whom were convicted. Those who escaped the death penalty were imprisoned or exiled to the colonies. The evening's readings will commemorate Cook and others like him, featuring J.R. Ackerley's poem Micheldever, penned in 1940. Works by Lord Byron, William Cobbett and John Clare, contemporary to the riots, will also feature alongside newspaper reports from the period. Tickets cost £14 and include a free pre-entertainment glass of wine, available from 6:30 p.m. Professor Lucas said, "The story of Cook is well known along the Deva Valley, but more generally the swing riots and their significance have been forgotten. The riots are a highly important but sadly neglected part of Hampshire's history. It is hoped that Captain Swing's message to Micheldever will start to remedy that, as will the wider commemorations being coordinated by the English Project." Right, well, we'd now go on to things that may be of interest coming up in the next week or so, starting with Heather, please.
This item is headed Popular Festival Set to Return with an Extra Day. Anticipation is building in and around Winchester, with just a few months to go until Mucky Weekender returns. The festival, which will be held from September the 5th to the 7th, has announced Don Letts as his headline act for Mucky Weekender's opening party night. Don is a legend in the music industry, and he is known for his work as a film director, musician and DJ. The festival this year will be returning with an increased capacity, with an additional day on its schedule as opposed to the two-day event previously. The event in 2023 sold out, with 5,000 tickets available for 2024. The event promises to be a sellout, with artists covering all genres of music, with up-and-coming acts intertwined with established and heritage acts. Curated by industry veteran Barry Ashworth, who is also the front man of the band Dub Pistols. The festival is actually named after one of the band's best-selling singles, Mucky Weekend. The opening party, which will take place on Thursday, September the 5th, will be supported by a performance by DJ-producers duo Utah Saints. Jez and Tim have been playing shows since the birth of house music and will take attendees on a journey showcasing their samples, remixes and tunes across all genres. With headliners like the Duelers, Dutty Moonshine Big Band, Dub Pistols and Dread Zone, Mucky Weekender is bound to be marked in the festival calendar for the end of season finale. More information at mucky-weekender.co.uk.
Thank you, Heather. Richard.
Well, not to be missed.
No.
Comedy's Gala Night. Winchester Comedy Festival's Summer Gala is coming to Theatre Royal Winchester on June the 28th. Among the performers is top TV comedian Zoe Lyons, Johnny Pelham, known for his live at the Apollo performances, his scripted comedy projects and his work as a script consultant for the BAFTA-winning sitcom Alma's Not Normal, and Julian Dean, an ITV stand-up hero and the host of the podcast Two Vegan Idiots. Tom Deacon will serve as the evening's MC. It starts at 7:30 p.m. Tickets can be booked by the Theatre Royal Winchester website or by calling 01962 840 440.
Richard. Deborah.
Test Valley Vineyard celebrates Wine Week. A Test Valley Vineyard and Winery is celebrating English Wine Week. Black Chalk Vineyard near Andover will hold a series of events throughout the week, which runs from Saturday, June the 15th to Sunday, June the 23rd. On Friday, June the 21st, Black Chalk will host tasting sessions of the full portfolio of wines in the Rose Garden at Mottisfont, accompanied by the FB Pocket Orchestra. The event will start at 5 o'clock and continue to 8 p.m. with Black Chalk wines available to buy either by the glass or the bottle. Also on Friday, Son of a Bun will be at the tasting room as part of the winery's Friday Night Lates session. The guest caterers will be serving fried chicken alongside the vineyard's wine. On Saturday, June the 22nd, Black Chalk will host its first supper club of the summer, with two sessions, one at 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. and the next at 7:30 p.m. to 9:30 p.m. The vineyard will serve a specially selected menu showcasing the best of British seafood from the Whistling Oyster, alongside a glass of Black Chalk Classic. The Whistling Oyster will also be shucking fresh oysters to order throughout the evening. To wrap up the week, on Sunday, June the 23rd, Black Chalk will take part at Vineyards of Hampshire's Fizz Fest on the 10th annual event, which takes place at fellow Hampshire winery, The Grange. For more information about these events, visit the Black Chalk Winery and Vineyard website.
Thank you, Deborah. My piece is headed Piano and Winds Concert. A concert featuring music for piano and winds is being organised by the Friends of Music in Winchester. It'll be held at St Paul's Church in Full Flood on Wednesday, June the 26th, starting at 7 p.m, with a pre-concert reception starting at 6:30. The Friends of Music in Winchester is a small charity supporting young musicians in the area. An ensemble of six will be performing the Trio Pathétique in D minor by Michael Glinka, the Quintet for Piano and Winds in E flat major by Beethoven, and the Sextet for Piano and Winds by Poulenc. Heather.
This music series encourages young players. The popular Perfect Pitch lunchtime concerts in the Chapel of St Cross Hospital started again in April. In the concerts given so far, young musicians from primary school age to those from sixth form colleges and the Royal Academy of Music have distinguished themselves to the delight of large and appreciative audiences. On the face of it, the picture looks promising for young musicians. However, the musical and mainstream press are full of stories about the lack of financial investment in music, and the fact that many leading orchestras and opera companies are under severe financial pressure and are making cutbacks. However, despite the apparent positive position in Winchester, 94% of children in the UK do not have the opportunity to play a musical instrument. The Friends of Music in Winchester, whose patrons and chairmen are great supporters of the Perfect Pitch concert series, with its emphasis on featuring young musicians, join with St Cross Hospital to provide a valuable opportunity and encouragement at the start of their musical journey. Perfect Pitch concerts are free to attend each Thursday at 12:30 p.m. until October the 31st.
Deborah Richard.
Inclusive Dance Show. A charity that holds dance classes for wheelchair users is putting on a summer showcase. Local Winchester dance charity Move Momentum, which also organises dance classes for young people and over 65s, is set to celebrate inclusive dance with its annual summer showcase on Saturday, June the 29th. The charity's dancers will be at the University of Winchester's Performance Gym, alongside performers from the Florian School of Dance, Blue Apple Theatre, a multi-sports club dance group, Compass. The event will begin at 4:30 and will display a variety of dance styles and performances. There'll be a raffle after the show. Tickets for the show can be bought via its Eventbrite page. For those who cannot make it in person, a live stream option is available.
Richard, Deborah.
Cabaret show won't fall flat. Flat and the Curves, the female cabaret group, will headline the Theatre Royal in Winchester on July the 18th as part of their 2024 UK tour. Charlotte, Katie, Arabella and Izzy, who formed the group in 2020 during the lockdown, have individually seen success on West End stages and beyond. Their songs, which combine light-hearted humour with strong feminist themes, have earned them considerable recognition, including a feature on the BBC. The women of Flat and the Curves serve up humour and strong vocals in a performance described by the Sunday Express as the most dynamic girl group to hit the circuit. Their Edinburgh Fringe show made it onto the British Comedy Guide lists of best-reviewed shows at the festival. Their blend of humour and provocative femininity has quickly drawn comparisons to well-known television and film productions like Sex and the City and Bridesmaids. The Comedy Girl Band said, "Everything we write about has been inspired by our own personal experience. Our hope and intention is that the audiences find it as enjoyable and emotionally stimulating watching, in a laughter is medicine kind of way, as we do performing it."
Thank you. And finally, just some bits and pieces from around the area over the course of the next sort of few weeks. Thursday the 4th of July sees the start of the New Forest Folk Festival. That is at Powell's Farm, Salisbury Road, Plateford, Romsey. Friday the 5th of July, Steel Antigua Vocal Ensemble, A Garden of Delights. That is at St. Peter's Church, Stockbridge. They are a world-class vocal ensemble. You have to pre-book at the church. Tuesday the 9th of July, 175 years of Winchester Prison. Now, you don't have to go for 775 years. anyway, that is doing time, 175 years of Winchester Prison at Hampshire Archives Local Studies Unit at the Sussex Street, Winchester. Saturday the 13th of July, Jane Austen's Winchester Guided Tour. That starts at 2:30. In the evening, Southern Voices 40th Anniversary Gala Concert and Reception, once again at St. Paul's Church, St. Paul's Hill, Winchester. Tuesday the 16th, an evening of adventure with John Wiley, MBE. He is an eco-triathlon. Friday the 19th is the start of the Foodies Festival at North Walls Recreation Ground. And at the Winchester Theatre Royal, there's the History of Rock in the evening. Right, well, that's what is going on in the area over the next few weeks. Before we go on to the general news, let's have a look at the lighting up time for the coming week. The sun, if there is any, will rise at about 4:50 a.m. and set again at around 9:25 p.m. Well, we now go on to items of general news. Heather, could we have the first article, please?
Seven lose jobs at City Shoe Shop. At least seven people have lost their jobs after the closure of a high street shop in Winchester. The staff at Chiropody were notified the day before that the shoe shop would be closing and that they would be out of employment. The Winchester branch belongs to a small chain of shoe shops that also offer podiatry consultations. Staff do not know the reason for the decision to close down the store, and some of them have been left to pack up the shop. The chain operates across the south, and the merchandise will likely be recycled to other branches, which includes stores in Southampton, Oxford and London. The news comes after a spate of closures in Winchester, with Bell Fine Art, Echo, Mooch, Phase 8, CCG, Pavilion and Patisserie Valerie all announcing their closures this year. Halfords in Winnall will also close on July the 5th. The civic chiefs at Winchester Bid insist that the high street business is healthy, despite publishing a report detailing business owners' low satisfaction levels in the city centre. The Chronicle has approached Chiropody for comment.
Richard, please.
TV presenter wades in on river itching sewage stench. Television presenter Dan Snow has claimed rivers are running with sewage after responding to a message on social media, highlighting the smell of sewage and the river itching. The historian was responding to a post on X, formerly known as Twitter, from Helen Farr, maritime archaeologist at the University of Southampton, who had commented on the state of the water at Riverside Park. She wrote, "Walked along the River Itchen today, and I strolled through Riverside Park and over to St. Denis. Swans, cygnets, elderflowers, and the stench of human sewage flowing out of sudden waterworks. The river was soupy." She added, "This is a crime. The company bosses must be held accountable." Replying to Helen's social media post, Dan Snow commented, "Rivers are running with sewage. I wish politicians were addressing this with greater urgency in this election campaign." Responding to the tweets, the spokesperson for Southern Water said, "We can confirm that Portswood Wastewater Treatment Works is operating as it should, in accordance with the Environment Agency's permit. There have been no storm overflows here recently. We are, however, aware of a separate challenge at the site relating to concerns over odour affecting the local area." They added, "We've committed to making £1 million of improvements this summer to change the way the site operates. It should help."
Thank you. Deborah.
Missing cushion in place after 90 years. A cathedral cushion honouring three of Britain's most prominent 19th century women has finally been made, almost a century after its original design, following its chance discovery by a best-selling author. Tracy Chevalier uncovered a forgotten watercolour commemorating Jane Austen, Florence Nightingale and Charlotte Yonge in the archives of a charity that supports Winchester Cathedral. The 61-year-old, best known for writing Girl with a Pearl Earring, was astonished to find the intricate 1930s design had never actually been made into a cushion, and offered to fund a local embroidery group to create it. Some 90 years after it was first designed, and following 2 years of painstaking embroidery work from a local resident, the cushion has now been completed and placed on the bishop's chair. Novelist Miss Chevalier said Pride and Prejudice author Jane Austen, who is buried at the cathedral, is now rightfully part of the fabric of the cathedral. The unlikely chain of events began in the early 1930s. When the Bishop of Winchester invited textile historian and artist Louisa Pessel to train volunteers to produce embroidered cushions and kneelers for the choir stalls and presbytery seats. Louisa, fellow artist Sybil Blunt, and hundreds of volunteers created 360 kneelers, 62 stall cushions, 34 long bench cushions, and 96 arms bags. The cushions, which are placed on chairs at the rear of the building, were created over a period of 5 years and provide a pictorial history of both the cathedral and the Diocese of Winchester. Nearly a century later, Miss Chevalier visited Winchester Cathedral from her home in Dorset to seek inspiration for a new novel she was planning. The author learned of the building's cushions and the tale of Ms. Pessel and Ms. Blunt, and became so inspired she wrote her 2019 novel, A Single Thread, based on their story. A year after the novel was published, Friends of Winchester Cathedral, which is chaired by former BBC presenter Bruce Parker, contacted the author to tell her they had found the original drawings in their office. Miss Chevalier looked through the pieces and was astonished to find one that she couldn't recognise. Austen, Florence Nightingale and children's author Charlotte Yonge were all prominent Hampshire women in the 19th century. "This design doesn't exist," she told staff at the charity. Following a lecture delivered by Miss Chevalier on her novel, the decision was made to create the missing cushion. "I said surely, because Jane Austen has such a connection with here, "Wouldn't it be great if there was a cushion commemorating her and honouring her?" she said. The author offered to fund the project, which, in a labour of love, took an embroiderer at Winchester Cathedral Guild of Broderers 2 years to complete. It's not known why this particular cushion wasn't made, but Miss Chevalier and the other individuals involved in the project speculated that it could be due to a dispute over the design. "I don't know, maybe they were not fans of Jane Austen's work," she said. "Maybe there was a dispute about which direction to go in, and they couldn't resolve that, and they thought, let's leave this argument for another day. I thought that, particularly for Jane Austen, her time has come, and it's perfect because next year is the 250th anniversary of her birth. I think it's very good timing for that moment. It's lovely, and I love the fact that it does have a more modern feel as well." The author said that it's good that cushions in the cathedral differ because different women made them at different times. Margaret Bingham, who in her 80s was tasked with the project and spent 2 years embroidering the design. "I've lived with it for so long," she said. "I was able to take it home because it was portable. I wanted to keep going, really, because I could be going for years and years at that rate," she said. The embroiderers used the other cushions in the cathedral, which dates back to 1079, as a source of inspiration in finishing the piece. Charlotte Young had written a book called The Daisy Chain, so I was asked to put daisies on, Margaret continued. I changed the typeface because I wasn't happy with it. I felt this was more readable and more modern. She said it would be impossible to guess how many hours the cushion took to create. "I was delighted to be asked," she added. "I'm delighted it's finished, but I've really lived with it for 2 years or so. I'm pleased that it's going into the cathedral and it will be used."
Thank you. My piece is headed "Quadruple Amputee Wins Backing for an Epic Journey." A man who is aiming to be the first quadruple amputee to row 350 miles offshore from Falmouth to Dover has been backed by MDL Mariners. Alex Lewis from Stockbridge will also hand cycle the land-based return journey to Falmouth after his offshore journey. The initial sea-based challenge, which begins and ends at the Peak in Harley Bay, a Cornish retreat, signals Alex's first major UK event and has been dubbed the Pig to Peak. It started on June the 2nd and is expected to end on July the 2nd. On June the 12th, he was aiming to row 30 miles from Hayling to Shoreham. Speaking on Insta, he said, "We need to press on now and get it done. A huge thanks to MDL for putting us up last night." The scheduled route includes pauses at MDL's well-known marinas, such as Queen Anne's Battery in Plymouth, Torquay Marina in Devon, and Sparks Marina in Hayling Island. MDL is also supporting Alex at those stopovers by giving free berthing for his adapted Flying 15 rowing boat, provided by Rannoch Adventure, in collaboration with Bath University and two support ships. MDL is also offering free car parking for four vehicles and providing lodgings for the support crew and rowers. Alex's hand cycling trip across the south of England back to Falmouth includes visiting various schools and businesses, community engagement and fundraising for charities, Hospitality Action, the Murray Parish Trust and the Alex Lewis Float Foundation. Alex contracted Strep A in 2013, leading to septicemia, toxic shock syndrome and necrotizing fasciitis, culminating in the loss of his limbs and part of his face. He required intensive treatment and was projected to need £4 million worth of assisted technology to aid his independent living. Alex found opportunity in adversity when he met a PhD student from Imperial College researching biometrotronics, who required amputees as subjects for trials of new technology. Alex now collaborates with multiple universities for AT-related projects. Alex, a 44-year-old married father of one, advocates for superior AT via his Float Foundation. that FLOAT stands for the Love of Assisted Technology. Tim Mayer, MDL's Sales and Marketing Director, says, "We are thrilled to be supporting Alex as he attempts to become the world's first quadruple amputee to row across the south of England. Alex has overcome extraordinary obstacles to achieve what he has, a real testament to his remarkable courage and fortitude against all odds." Heather, the next piece, please.
Medal-winning athlete seeks triumphs on film. Ben Tyler is not only winning Special Olympics medals, but also shining on stage. The multi-talented performer who has Down syndrome is pursuing his goal of acting in TV and films. Tyler, an accomplished athlete, bagged silver and bronze medals at the Special Olympics World Games in Abu Dhabi in 2019. He remains dedicated to his sports, going to the gym as well as playing tennis across the UK with the Lawn Tennis Association. Tyler loves music and enjoys singing and playing the drums. He likes Take That and is a fan of country singer Nathan Evans. His favourite is Evans' version of Wellerman. The performer has also delighted audiences with his dance abilities with Blue Apple's dance group in Winchester. Recently, he was in a video promoting the Big Movement, a dance initiative organised by Zoe Logic Dance Theatre in partnership with Solent Mind. Tyler's love for performance extends to acting with Blue Apple's Special Assignments Company, SAC. Known for its unique and visual live art at events such as the Winchester Hat Fair, this year SAC is collaborating with a new carnival company to create a 9-foot Jane Austen living statue puppet. Tyler will be the puppeteer leading the event. In February, Tyler took to the stage at the Chesil Theatre, performing in Cake by Victoria Muse, under the direction of Marcus Whitfield. The play, part of a series based on the theme of snakes and ladders, explores the intricacies of relationships with a character who has Down syndrome. Tyler's range of skills reflect his active involvement in sport, drama, dance, and his day job as an assistant chef at YMCA, Fairthorne Manor, and at Brendan Care. But the ultimate dream is to become a screen actor. Ben's mum, Jo, said he's always had great pleasure from training, performing and competing, and his self-esteem just rockets. He started dancing seriously when he was at Alton College, and then when he was 16 he took up drama and street dance at Blue Apple. As the youngest of 9 children, he's been brought up exactly like all the rest, and I've expected people to take him on and expected him to keep up, and the coaches have been amazed and proud of what he's achieved.
Thank you. Heather, Richard, please.
This is a happy story too. Swan couple reunited after air rifle shooting. A much-loved swan in Whiteley has been reunited with its partner just days after being shot with an air rifle. Wendy Herman from Swan Support was able to release the recovered bird back into its home pond at the Solent Business Park in Whiteley, where it's become a popular attraction. The injured swan was found at around 10 a.m. on Thursday, June the 6th, near the Bridge Deck Cafe, with injuries to its wing consistent with being shot with an air rifle. Residents and business park staff in Whiteley have said that the pair of swans are a cherished part of the local community, some claiming to have fed them for more than 20 years. Swans can live up to 26 years in the wild. Helen Ireland, 58, watched the swans' reunion. She said, "After the heartache of last week, it was such a magical experience to watch." Wendy said that her wing had healed up well, and she let us know that she was on her Whiteley to release her. On her way to Whiteley to release her. It was so special. As soon as she got out of the van, you could tell she knew she was home. You could tell straight away that the male swan could hear her just by his body language. The pair then spent the next 40 minutes washing together. The workers at the business park were filming and cheering from the window. It was a very heartwarming moment. Helen and other residents in Whiteley are now calling for more security in the Southern Business Park security area after a rise in swan attacks in Fareham and Southampton. In September last year, a swan was found decapitated by shocked dog walkers at the Mansbridge Reservoir area. Less than 3 months ago, at the end of April, a swan died after being shot in the neck with an air rifle near Western Parade. Helen said, "The swans are so vulnerable, and that's why this has happened. We need better security in the area to stop a repeat incident, particularly with the rise in attacks." Hampshire Constabulary is investigating this latest incident, but a spokesperson said it had no updates following a public appeal for information.
Thank you, Richard. Deborah, please.
Support for expansion plan at GP Surgery. Plans to expand a Hampshire market town's doctor's surgery have been met with floods of support. A total of 28 people had submitted supporting comments by June the 13th for the two porter cabin buildings at the surgery in Lower Lane, Bishop's Waltham. The application by Morag Kirby of the Hampshire and Isle of Wight Integrated Care Board includes four clinical rooms with a small waiting area between. The buildings are proposed to be on site for a period of 260 weeks, which is just under 5 years. The scheme was partly funded by Winchester City Council with £217,000 from the Community Infrastructure Levy, paid by developers as part of the planning process. Councillor Jonathan Williams, who represents the Bishop's Waltham ward, said, "For context, the current demand, the existing surgery building was designed on old NHS standards to accommodate 7,000 patients. The surgery now has double that number on its current list of patients. New NHS standards mean that the room sizes in the existing building need to be doubled, meaning to meet the current demand, the surgery effectively needs to quadruple in size. The nature of the cabins being a temporary fixture, this will allow for additional appointments while long-term situation is sought in finding a new, larger premises for the GP surgery."
Deborah, my piece is headed Trees Given Protection. A tree protection order, TPO, has been made on a pair of trees in the yard of a Winchester church. The trees, a pair of lime trees, are located in St Bartholomew's Church in King Alfred Place, Hyde. Both are very close to the last known resting place of King Alfred the Great. The protection order was approved by the Winchester City Planning Committee on Wednesday, June the 12th. Speaking in opposition to the order, professional tree inspector Mark Merritt said, "The reason for opposition to the TPO is the trees do not meet the criteria for the conditions. To be considered for a TPO, they must be of high amenity value and in reasonable condition. As we can see, the trees are not considered to have a high amenity value. Fungal brackets have been found, which we believe to be a decay fungus which attacks the timber of the tree, rendering it weak and liable to failure. The visual impact of the tree is very limited and the amenity value is low." I think that must mean amenity value is low. "It offers no screening to the properties around the church and it does not contribute to the character of the area." Councillor Jonathan Williams said, "I do feel that the amenity value is much less than the normal sorts of trees we see. I still feel that with this being a conservation zone as well, applying a TPO would be a sensible decision to make today, and then a further application at a later date regarding the management of the trees themselves. I would be minded to have the TPO put on so as in future we would have some sort of control over the management of those trees." The Planning Committee voted in favour of the TPO. The police.
This item is headed Beer, Cider and Sea Shanties. A family-run pub in Winchester put on its annual beer and cider festival. Hot on the heels of the success of the Winchester Beer and Cider Festival, the Hyde Tavern held the event last week. Despite the temperamental weather, locals flocked through the pub's doors to sample the drinks and dance to the blues of the Hightown Crows. The landlady, Janet Theodore, known as Jan, was pouring out drinks along with other volunteers from the vast number of kegs that lined the pub's walls. The turnout hasn't been as good as last year, but that's because of the weather, said Jan. The music has been fantastic, though. There were dozens of varieties of beer and cider, both nationally and locally produced. Revellers enjoyed various musical acts over the 3 days, including Shanty and Jelvis.
Please.
Club wants people to get into a bind over books. A Winchester-based bookbinding club is offering beginner courses to people interested in the ancient skill. Southern Bookcraft Club, based in Winnell Farm Industrial Estate, Eaton Lane, was founded more than 35 years ago. Since moving to its current premises 15 years ago, the club has held taster days and beginner courses for those looking to get into the hobby. Club member John Green, who runs the taster days and courses, said, "The best way to get involved in the hobby is to come to the taster days or the beginner courses. By the time we finish those sessions, we will have taught the pupils how to do level 1 and level 2 bookbinding. A lot of people think it's going to be super and then realise that it's not for them. So the taster days and course allow them to try it out and see how they feel. Everyone in the club is very friendly and always offer help to people who are struggling with their projects. The courses provide people with all the equipment they need to learn the basics, with members of the club able to use the bindery site at any time." John said that during the COVID pandemic, membership of the club fell to around 5 people, with the group receiving a government grant of £4,000 to stay in operation. Since then, the club has bounced back, with more than 20 dues-paying members. The club also receives support from the community in the form of donations of books and materials, with John saying, "Assistance comes from outside. It's always welcome, and we're grateful for it. We have people coming from all parts of the county. This is the only member-owned organisation in the country which does bookbinding, so we're unique. The group only uses the bindery 3 days a week, but would be happy to rent it out to other arts or craft organisations on the other 3 days. It's also unused in the evening."
Richard, Deborah.
Railway show was first class. One of the biggest toy train events in the country came to Alsford and drew large crowds. The 30th Festival of Toy Trains took place at Perrins Community School in New Alsford on Saturday, June the 15th. More than 500 people from all over the country came. The event, which started in 1993 at Alsford Community Centre, moved to Perrins School in 2000. And has been held there ever since. There were more than 22 model railway layouts of different varieties and themes on display, and 70 sales tables for those looking for interesting bits and pieces to browse. Event organiser Bob Leggett, who's been running the event for the entire 30 years, said he has received great feedback from those who were there. He said it was a brilliant day, with some superb layouts and bits of pieces on display, offering something for absolutely everyone. Bob said the event had been promoted more on social media this year, with more families from Alsford and the surrounding area visiting them than on previous years. The event was supported by volunteers from Cheriton, Four Marks and Alsford Scouts, who provided catering, and including the barbecue, serving bacon butties, tea and cake. Bob said the scout groups will receive a donation from the event for their help, as will the Alsford branch of Save the Children, whose volunteers manned the door and helped with the event. Bob, who now lives in Easton but lived in Alsford for 30 years, said, "I'm delighted with how the day went and the wonderful variety of layouts plus toys on sale. We had some fantastic feedback saying how much people had loved the day, and it's something that can be enjoyed by all members of the family, no matter how young or old. Over the past 30 years, this has been one of the best shows that we've put on. A massive thank you to the local scouts and the Alsford branch of Save the Children for their help. It wouldn't have been possible without you. Sadly, Bob will be looking for an alternative venue next year, after difficulties at the school, to continue to accommodate the event. As an additional attraction, a vintage bus operated from the festival, taking people to the old Alsford Village Fair in the afternoon.
My piece is headed Dane, 85, gets BEM honour. It is the British Empire Medal. A man living in Winchester area has been awarded a BEM for his outstanding work for the community. Dane Royston Beavis Oliver, 85, of Longstock, was nominated as a medalist of the Order of the British Empire in the King's Birthday Honours List. Mr. Oliver was first contacted by the Cabinet Office around 2 weeks ago as the government department wanted to check the information they had about him. Commenting on the phone call, Mr. Oliver said, "Well, it was a bit of a surprise, wasn't it? My first reaction was to say no. But then my wife said that that would be an insult to all the people I have worked with over the years." Mr. Oliver is particularly fond of his community, which he says is held together by a strong community spirit. Longstock is one of those archetypical Hampshire villages that's full of people who help each other, he said. "I started a youth club in 1980 called the Mayflies, and it's one of those organisations with people from all walks of life. It's seen as a bonding agent for the whole village." Mr. Oliver has worked for Hampshire County Council organising outdoor sports events. He also participates in excursions for the Duke of Edinburgh's award scheme. Also honoured is in the Winchester area was Valerie Mary Etteridge of Otterbourne for services to the community. Heather, please, your last piece.
Business owners' satisfaction low. A business group has insisted that businesses in Winchester are thriving in spite of low satisfaction levels. Winchester Bid told the Chronicle there is no need for concern, although a report they published says businesses' satisfaction levels have almost halved since last year. The report, which gathered data from the first economic quarter, stated, "Businesses have faced a really hard time since Christmas, as reflected in the lower business confidence or sentiment scores referred to below." The Bid's Business Barometer report revealed that fewer than one in five businesses feel that sales are good, consistent, or picking up. Fewer than one in seven taking part in the survey said that customer numbers were up, good, or heavy. There have also been a number of recent closures in the city, including Halfords, Mooch, Echo, and Bell Fine Art. Some residents fear that the high street will fill up with coffee shops as a result. Dr. Paul Spencer, Executive Director of Winchester Bid, said, "I think there's been a few closures recently, but our vacancy rate is very, very low. And some of the closures are because of retirements in the case of the smaller independent shops." He said that the state of business in the city centre was very healthy. When asked if Phase 8 might have closed because business was not great, he said, "As far as we know, it was a high-performing store." Concerns have been also raised about the apparently high turnover rate of businesses in Winchester. "I would not call it a high turnover rate," said Dr. Spencer, "but we've got lots of businesses that have been here for many, many years. It isn't the cheapest place, but that's because it's a good place to operate a business." The Chronicle also talked to Lucille Thompson, Winchester County Council's Cabinet Member for Business and Culture. She said, "I think businesses in Winchester are thriving, and our high street is really thriving. We have an incredibly low vacancy rate at 4%. The national average is 13%, and around the rest of the city it is 7%. We have very little control about who goes into vacant shops due to changes in legislation by the Conservative government, which mean that any shop can be turned into a coffee shop if the owners should choose to do so."
Thank you, Heather. Well, I'm sorry to say that that's all we have for you this week. Before we go, another reminder that if you do have any problems with your recording, the contact number is on the key fob attached to the memory stick. Now, would you please put the memory stick and the address label back into the wallet when you finish with it and return it to us as soon as possible? Well, thanks to all our support team for the preparation and dispatch of this edition. And, of course, many thanks to the readers today, Heather.
Goodbye.
Richard.
Bye.
Deborah.
Goodbye.
And from me, Peter. Until the next time, goodbye.